how to cry. And I showed the clouds how to cover up a clear blue sky. And the tears that I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, big river. And I'm gonna sit right here until I die. I met her accidentally in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it tore me up every time I heard her drawl, southern drawl. Then I heard my dream went back downstream, cavorting in Davenport. And I followed you, big river, when you called. Then you took me to St. Louis, later on down the river. A freighter said she's been here, but she's gone, boy, she's gone. I found her trail in Memphis, but she just walked up the bluff. She raised a few eyebrows and then she went on down alone. Now won't you bat it down by Baton Rouge, River Queen, roll it on. Take that woman on down to New Orleans, New Orleans. Go on, I've had enough. Dump my blues down in the Gulf. She loves you, big river, more than me. Now I taught to weeping willow how to cry, cry, cry. And I showed the clouds how to cover up a clear blue sky. And the tears that I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, big river. And I'm gonna sit right here until I die.
Thanks for tuning in for Johnny Cash. I'm Michael Goldberg, broadcasting from Northern Community Radio's home on the Mississippi River. The station's listeners know that the river is a frequent guest on the air. Our program hosts look out onto the river from the studio and are often remarking on its condition and the birds at the feeders. There's the station's annual River Festival, and of course our volunteer music producers keep the flow going on the river. All of us up here in the headwaters were ever crisscrossing the big river and its tributaries. Tribute. That's what I want to pay to the river today. For close to 30 years, I've lived beside Wabana Creek, on its way to Clearwater Lake, then Clearwater Creek, into the La Prairie, finally joining the big river to the Gulf of Mexico. The waters I splashed in last July are maybe just now reaching the Delta. And some of them eventually reaching the shores of distant continents, I guess, or floating through the skies, maybe one rainy day to fall into Wabana Creek. All the water there ever was is still, and all the water we'll ever have, we have now. It's a wonderful gift living on the creek, and we've mirrored its journey to the ocean. One time, we carried a small bottle of water from the creek that had been blessed in a water ceremony, and so was imbued with our gratitude and respect. Carried it on an airplane to New Orleans and went down to the industrial end of the river, each of us slipping a few drops into the murky water and saying a few words. I felt somber. Beneath the moment, I was beset by doubts, doubt that prayer can heal the world, doubt that we can protect our water, or that humans ever will live with gratitude and respect. But doubt is part of the package, I think. That's just how it is if you're trying to stay human. On today's program, we'll hear some river stories, with a dip into the Big Fork River, a cruise up the Rhine, and Jim Gallagher paddling north into the Arctic. Stay tuned and dance along on the banks of the river.
I'm not.
Galactic dancing the hey na na down the delta. We'll get back to the Mississippi River upstream this time a little later in the program. But first, we paddle north, way north, with Jim Gallagher. Jim produces Paddle Minnesota for Northern Community Radio with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Back in the 1980s, he was a ranger in the Boundary Waters canoe area. Now he lives near Bemidji, and he figures he's paddled over 5,000 miles. Here's his story called Becoming the River.
In the cool darkness of a tavern on a July afternoon, I take the first sips of a pint of ale. The hops bites at my tongue, and the carbonation refreshes. As I get reacquainted with this simple pleasure, I contemplate hydration. Beer, after all, is largely water. The fizz and the citrus notes of the ale contrast with the water I've been drinking for the past 4 weeks. This ritual first beer is the beginning of my transition from life on a canoe expedition of drinking from a source other than the river I traveled. It's a ritual I've repeated each summer for the past 20 years. The human body is about 60% water. We take in and lose nearly 4 liters of water each day. The facts are clear. We exist because of fresh water. With a pen in hand and a bar napkin as my whiteboard, I follow the numbers just a bit further. After only a few weeks of river travel, all of the water in my body was replaced by the river. As I take a few more sips of beer, I consider the result. The weeks-long process of hydration on the river coincides with the shrugging off of the stress I packed with me from home. Somewhere in those weeks, I became part of the river. This may be the immersion a month of canoe travel requires. Weeks to let go of our lives back home, and weeks to absorb the water that we paddle. The Arctic region of North America is protected by its isolation. It is the purity that isolation brings that I seek each summer, clear water that can be drunk without filtering or treatment. In the summer of 2016, I immersed myself in the Horton River. The Horton River is one of the most remote rivers in the Northwest Territories of Canada. It flows north for 375 miles through the region between Great Bear Lake and the Arctic Ocean. The northernmost reaches of the boreal forest follows the Horton River Valley north. Beyond the valley, the barren lands begin. The wildlife following the forest blends with the species at home on the tundra. Arctic terns shared the sky with red-breasted American robins. Tiny woodland warblers familiar to me much further south called from thickets. Their songs seemed out of place at this latitude. I was north of the Arctic Circle and getting further north every day. For the first 2 weeks, it hardly felt like I was traveling on an Arctic river. Temperatures soared into the 80s. I renewed my baptism in the river with daily swims. In communion with the river, I ate char, lake trout, and grayling caught in the clear water. Others were caught and released. Their strong hearts beat against the hands that cradled them in the water, gently sliding them back into the current. Each fish flashed bright colors in life, subtle purples, pinks, and deep gold. Each was like a jeweled work of art. At a bend in the river, I came upon a mother grizzly with her 2 cubs. She stood up to her full height to assess the danger to her offspring. I floated past in my canoe, separated by 100 yards of water. All down the length of the river, bear tracks in the sand and coarse tawny hair stuck to spruce trees reminded me that other bears were never too far away. With less than a week remaining on the river, I was reminded of the full potential of Arctic weather. Temperatures plunged to below freezing. Wind-driven snowflakes as big as loonies fell in loud splats on the tent. Snow accumulated. It did not feel like July 20th. With no time for a weather delay, I paddled on in the foul weather. Snow changed to ice pellets and stung what little skin I had exposed. In its final distance, the clear water of the river became cloudy and tinged with sediment. This, too, I drank. With the changing terrain and water quality, I could smell burning sulfur on the wind. Wisps of smoke rose above the hills and diffused into the air as ghost-like apparitions. I was paddling through the smoking hills, a distinctive geological phenomenon at the end of the Horton River. Walking on top of the smoking hills, I met two musk oxen moving along the ridgeline. Looking like refugees from the last ice age, their long skirts of hair blew in the cold wind coming off the bay. The big bull telegraphed his annoyance by rubbing his scruffy face on his foreleg. The pair paused long enough for a few photos before charging down the side of the hill, seemingly immune to the steep slope I had just labored up. On the appointed day, the float plane landed on the river, the color of tea taken with milk. My departure from the river threaded a needle of logistical challenges, including bad weather and hundreds of miles of air travel. In this remote region, I felt lucky just to be on time. The barkeep slides another round in front of me. A ritual first beer becomes two. I've begun the slow process of shedding the river within me. It will leave me as certainly as I have left the river. Eventually, I'll become again part of where I call home. But here in the pub, I contemplate where my next memories will be made. There are miles of other rivers to paddle and other pristine waters to quench my thirst.
Thanks to Jim Gallagher. More of his canoe adventures and explorations can be heard on his program, Paddle Minnesota, broadcast Wednesday mornings here on Northern Community Radio. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, from the mountains of fame to the river so deep. I must be looking for something. Something sacred I lost, but the river is wide, and it's too hard to cross. Even though I know the river is wide, I walk down every evening and stand on the shore. I try to cross to the opposite side so I can finally find what I've been looking for. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, through the valley of fear, to a river so deep. Searching for something, taken out of my soul, something I can never lose, something somebody stole. I don't know why I go walking at night, but now I'm tired and I don't want to walk anymore. Hope it doesn't take the rest of my life until I find what it is I've been looking for. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, through the jungle of doubt, to the river so deep. I know I'm searching for something, something so undefined, that it can only be seen by the eyes of the blind in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, through the desert of the truth, to the rivers of deep. We all end in the ocean, we all start in the streams. We're all carried along by the river of dreams. In
like some lover from some other land. Before the dust can settle, I'll kick it up and tear it down again. I got the wanderlust somewhere.
Bonnie Raitt on Stay Human. This week we're celebrating the river, always a lure to those who want to move on. Jack Nachbar stopped by recently to tell me about the cruise that he and his wife took last summer on the Rhine River.
The thing about the Rhine is it's ancient, and it's been, in terms of Europe, very historically important because it was kind of a border for the Roman Empire for a long time. And also, it was an important key trade route for years and years and years. One of the things about the Rhine is it seems like around every corner there's a castle. And so we asked, well, why are all these castles? And they said because they would hold that edge of the river and charge tax money for goods going through during the Middle Ages. And then, of course, during World War II, it was a key thing for the Allies to get into Germany. It was heavily bombed. It's been heavily reconstructed. So it was a key element in the war. It's fairly wide and not terribly fast, actually, but it's certainly wide enough for commerce. I think that's the key thing. So there was an awful lot of us travelers for taking summer cruises. There's a number of boats, but there's much more commercial kinds of boats, which are bigger and longer, going up and down the river all the time. It's a busy river. It's kind of funny. Europeans I wouldn't like this much, but when they're taking their vacations, they get little tents and they go to some of the edges of the small towns, and they put up the tents in these little crowded villages right by the water, and they set up there maybe for a couple of weeks. And you know, it looks like it's probably more crowded than they have it at home. But they're in the sun and they're by the river, and apparently they enjoy it. And there were dozens of these kinds of little quasi vacation tent villages as we moved along the river. We were off boat usually twice a day. What they tend to do is travel at night. And so by the time you're finished with breakfast, they're ready to disembark. For example, we were in Bonn, and they took us to where Kennedy gave his famous speech, and they took us around to where they'd bombed and reconstructed. But in the afternoon, what interested my wife and I was a trip to Beethoven's house. So we went there on our own, and there was a little concert going on downstairs and the inevitable gift shop. But seeing his really pretty meager quarters. Beethoven did not have an early childhood. He had an abusive father and an alcoholic, so they couldn't afford much. And I think there was a restaurant in front of their quarters, and he grew up under those circumstances and, of course, was exploited by his father because he had all those musical skills. We went up into the so-called mountains, the really large hills, east of Strasbourg, and you become awed by the fact that they're covered, even though they're fairly steep, that they're covered with grapevines, wine-growing region. And Alsatian wines actually are pretty well-known. And we went to a stork park. That was terrific. The stork population was declining dramatically, and storks are kind of like the national bird of Alsace. And so they were worried about it, and so they established this kind of sanctuary for them, and their numbers have been coming up. And so even around the town now, if you look on chimneys, there's storks. You know, and there was a lot of them, big storks, little storks, baby storks, and they're all flying free. And what draws them in, of course, is they're fed. And it was really neat. They're pretty cool birds, actually, and they're big. The villages up there are extraordinary because they have contests between these small villages up in this wine-growing region. They're kind of flower-growing contests. So these towns are just covered in flowers, and they get like a 2, 3, and 4 rating, and it's competitive between them, and so they're just gorgeous. And one of the really gorgeous towns was this Kaiserberg, which is maybe a little bit bigger, but had, once again, it had a river running right through the middle of it, and all these, you know, and it was a little bit larger than some of the other villages, but again, all these wonderful, beautifully kept, centuries-old houses. And we stopped and had kind of one of the national dishes of Strasbourg, tart flambé, which is kind of like almost like a pizza crust, but it's made with cheese and cream with a little ham sprinkled on top. And we'd been to Alsace maybe 20, 25 years ago and had it then, and it was wonderful. And it was wonderful again. It's nice to eat some of these national dishes. So Strasbourg was wonderful, both the city itself, which I think people should really go to. You will never be disappointed by Strasbourg, and getting out into the country around it to enjoy that. Then the next day, pretty much on the other side of Strasbourg a little ways, is the very legendary Black Forest. Famous for, of course, Black Forest cake, of course. And we had the best Black Forest cake in the world while we were there. Lots of whipped cream and cherries and dark cake. And it is the place where if you drive through it, I suppose here in northern Minnesota, you know, we're used to forests. Theirs is much more hardwoods with a few evergreens, whereas ours is probably the opposite here. So it's different. And you can really all of a sudden understand, I think, much more, at least I did, both the Brothers Grimm and Wagner. Because Hansel and Gretel, when they get sent to the forest, are in the Black Forest. So that's the inspiration for a lot of their old tales and the horror that's involved with it. You can see these dense forests that are there. And I think Wagner, too, probably got a lot of his ideas from the legends that grew up around the, you know, the kind of the mystery of the Black Forest. So it was a good place to go through. It was like opening a book and jumping into a fairy tale, a lot of it. It really was, you know. These little picturesque towns, they'd tell us stories and legends. Lovely, lovely.
Thank you.
That's the half quartet with Für Elise by Ludwig van Beethoven, taking him somewhere he's never been before. And thanks to Jack Nachbar for giving me a glimpse of somewhere I've never been before at the Rhine River. This morning, like most mornings, I was in Wabana Township, standing beside Wabana Creek to greet the day. Wabun means east in Ojibwe, and we're on the eastern edge of the Leech Lake Band's territory. Wabun also means dawn, and I guess it depends on context. Wabununung is the morning star. Wabana Creek flows about 20 yards east of my house, and when the sun crests the ridge on the other side, the creek turns to mist, rising up into the morning sky. I imagine myself turned to mist, the water of my body released with every breath. Or when the temperatures fall to single digits, my own shell is like the layer of ice that forms and melts and freezes again, clear cold water running invisible below. Like the morning, the creek is always new, and the critters know it. From water bugs and chubs and frogs, the mink, the heron, the eagles, they're always up to date on the news it brings, discovering the creek's secrets and surprises. The creek connects me to its aquifer and to its destination, but also to all the running waters all around the globe. The streams and rivers chosen by thousands of generations for human settlements, how we get and grow our food, borrowing a little of its power to turn our mills. Each spring and tributary, joining with others, flooding and subsiding, carving the face of the world. I hear a splash. Around the bend, some deer have come for a drink. Their morning ritual, to come to the creek, to let the waters flow through and around them. Their blood, like mine, mostly water. Their creek, like mine, a source and a salvation.
The water is wide, I can cross over, and neither have I wings to fly. Build me a boat that will carry two, and both shall row, my love and I. There is a ship, and she sails the sea. She's loaded deep, as deep can be, but not so deep as the love I'm in. I know not how I sink or swim. Oh, love is handsome, and love is fine. The sweetest jewel, when first it's new, but love grows old and waxes cold and fades away like summer dew.
James Taylor on Stay Human, Words and Music for Spirit and Courage, heard every week at this hour on Northern Community Radio. My friend Sandy LeBlanc lives about 5 miles east of Effie on the Big Fork River, flowing north to join the Rainy River at the Canadian border. Sandy spends more time than anyone I know in the river, swimming the Big Fork.
Early in the morning, as soon as it's light out, I like to go down and swim. So that could be anywhere between 5:30, quarter to 6 in the morning, or as late as 7:30, 8 o'clock, depending upon when it gets light out and how cold the water temperature is. To me, it doesn't really matter how cold the air is, because, you know, I can wear a swimming cap if my head is cold. Once I get in the water, it's all dependent upon the water temperature, what I can handle. I've been in as late as the end of October some years, but those are generally seasons where it's warmer in the late fall than it is in some other years. And I've been in as early as, I think April 10th was the earliest that I've been in. When I first start swimming in the spring, you know, it can be, and I say swimming rather lightly here, in the early spring and the late fall, it can be as short as 5 minutes, as short as going in and being in the water as long as I can feel like I can stand it. But as the season progresses, I generally like to be in the water for about 45 minutes if I've got the time to do that. And, so the routine is, because of course the river flows, so the earlier in the season after the ice goes out is when I first start putting my feet in the water, is as soon as the ice goes out. And then as it warms up a little bit, then I'll gradually start to actually go in for my swims. Early in the season, the river flows with some force. So it's going in from our little beach and going, and then of course the water's higher too early in the spring as the ice is going out and the water's flowing and the snow's melting into the river. So I go in to about waist high, chest high, and I drop my feet and I paddle as hard as I can, and the river will just shoot me down, and so I don't do that for too long, and then I drop my feet, and then it's a workout just plowing upriver to get back to where my starting point is. So I just do that over and over and over until I feel like I've had a good workout. And then as the season progresses, the current slows down, and then gradually start to swim down towards the bridge, which is downriver from us. And then again, it's all dependent upon the strength of the current. Sometimes towards the end of the season here, towards the end of the summer, I was doing 4 laps from what I call laps, going walking straight out into about the middle of the river and then swimming down to the bridge and then back upriver to our little beach and down and back, and I would do that 4 times. But it takes a while for the river and I to get to a point where I can do that 4 times, because again, it's all dependent upon the strength of the current. So earlier in the summer, I might be able to do 2 laps, but then it's a harder swim back upriver because, of course, I'm going against the current. So, yeah, I just can't explain what it's like. It's so lovely to get my exercise, to get my contemplative time in the mornings. It's my time of prayer and reflection. And communing with nature. I've seen everything from ducks and geese, otters, deer, bear, eagles and hawks looking for a meal, and I have to sometimes feel like I have to make myself known to all of these creatures, whether it's in a loud voice letting them know I'm not a meal, or a soft voice letting them know I'm not of any harm to them. You know, I have a long relationship with rivers. When I grew up in northern Wisconsin, we lived on the Flambeau River. And interestingly enough, you know, when I think back on it, it was kind of a similar situation in that though we lived in a, I lived in a town, but our house was up on a hill, and then to get to the river, you'd have to walk down this hill, similar to what we have here, and then the land would level out, and then there would be a slight drop again, just like here, down into the river. And so I grew up on a river. I was always attracted to rivers, always just took to rivers as a child, or to water as a child. And so so there's something, though, about rivers versus lakes that I just love, and maybe it's a reflection of the environment I grew up in. I like that flowing body of water. To me, there's a different sort of feel to that current.
Sandy LeBlanc on and in the Big Fork River. Here's a new one from Charlie Parr.
When I go down that funeral road, Lord, I'm gonna be dressed up fine. I'm gonna have me a nice new suit and tie like I never could have afforded when I was alive. Well, I ain't dead yet, let me wear that suit right now. I ain't nobody gonna see it when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Lord, I ain't dead yet, give me my flowers now. Gonna be a big old band. They're gonna play all my favorite songs. Well, they plant me in the sand. Ah, but I ain't dead yet. Let me hear that music now. There ain't no way I can hear it when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. They're gonna have nice things to say. They're gonna say, you know, he was a good egg. Yeah, even don't really feel that way. Ah, but I ain't dead yet. Tell me what you think right now. You can't look me in the eye when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Flowers everywhere. All my friends are gonna send some to show how much they care. And I ain't dead yet. Let me have them flowers now. There ain't no way I'm gonna smell them when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground.
Charlie Parr, you hear his music on KAXE, KBXE, on Minnesota Musicians, New Music, and on the River Music Mix. My friend Jack Shelton is one of the volunteer hosts for that music mix. That's one of his activities among many. And here he shares with us his life with the river.
For more than a third of my life, I've lived on a river. I've always been a river rat. Lakes are great, but there's nothing like a river. Lakes answer to the seasons, solid in some seasons, liquid in others. They have waves. Rivers run. They run through me and within me. I grew up on the banks of the Maumee River, the largest river that flows into the Great Lakes. It starts in northeastern Indiana and crosses the northwestern corner of Ohio, emptying into Lake Erie at Toledo. As a kid, if I wasn't on my ham radio, I was probably at the river. Way better than baseball or playing cards. River activities were limitless. Early spring brought eel pout fishing, not the slimy relative of the cod that populates some Minnesota lakes, but a smallish kin to the bullhead. My next-door neighbor, Emil Proshek, taught me to fish. He was old and waddled. We'd grab our cane poles, night crawlers that I'd caught, and a bucket, and head over the bank. In the early spring, when the river was high, the eel pout were running. It wouldn't be unusual to catch 50 or 100 of the little slimy critters. Watching the bobber circle in an eddy until it jerked under made a 10-year-old's heart race. Best fishing was in the evening with a lantern. Some folks had built a fire next to the water, which also provided warmth on a cool early April night. During dog days of summer, when the fish weren't biting, there was always rocks to skip. On our part of the river, the shale river bottom provided endless skippers. Another favorite activity during low water was wading the 100-plus yards from Wood County to Lucas County side. A nasty stretch of rapids made this particularly challenging. With a little luck, you could cross the strong current without getting up to your thighs, unless you slipped or misjudged the holes. Either could have you up to your neck. The Maumee wasn't the clear, transparent river we in northern Minnesota know as our Mississippi. To the contrary, it looked like strong coffee with plenty of cream. You see, it was polluted. That was a term Robert, my dad, had for the water. I was forbidden from swimming due to pollution. Even today, although I can swim, I don't like to. I think that harkens back to a combination of fear of catching polio at the municipal swimming pool in town or catching whatever pollution gave you in the river. No doubt, the presence of phosphates and nitrogen in the runoff from the entire upstream catchment of the river caused huge algae blooms, the likes of which I've never seen elsewhere. And, as was customary at the time, municipal sewers from the towns all along the Mississippi's banks basically piped in raw sewage. Gone were the game fish of generations before. Carp, suckers, and bullheads were now the common fare. Fast forward 20 years, and I meet the love of my life on the banks of the same Maumee. We even shared our first kiss, and a year later, we're married there. Cindy and I settled in Minneapolis, another river town. After many years of the Northwoods calling us, we decided to look north for our retirement home. We knew we wanted to be on water. After visiting our first Mississippi River property, we realized how the river spoke to us. My childhood memories just kept bringing me to the river. When we found our dream home on the Mississippi, we were smitten. We've named it Bosque Norte, Spanish for North Woods. The river's a metaphor for life. It brings different gifts with each season. Located just a quarter of a mile downstream from Big Wolf Lake, the flowage is scooped up from the warm water at the bottom of the lake. Hence, the river at Bosque Norte virtually never freezes over, ushering a wealth of winter gifts. A long string of sub-zero daytime highs, along with nights that even John Latimer would call harsh, will create a crust of ice right up to my dock, but nothing like the hard water that makes ice fishers happy. The open water beckons the trumpeter swans who congregate there to sing to me during the early and long nights of winter. As spring approaches and the local loons and mergansers return from their winter havens, they camp out awaiting ice out on their preferred nesting lakes. Then the red-winged blackbird's ratchet-like call is a harbinger of warmer days and balmy evenings and spring peepers. other waterfowl join in the mix, looking for hollow trees, nesting places, or duck houses set up by neighbors hoping for a wood duck pair to observe. Lazy days of summer produce considerable relief from the heat with a quick dip. For one looking for a little aerobic fun, one only need wade out into the current, face upriver, and stroke away. This is the equivalent of an endless pool without chlorine. When the cattails turn brown and the wild rice has been harvested, the elusive Sora gang keep track of each other with their kirwee and whinny calls. I've only seen one briefly when I flushed it from a cattail clump, only for it to disappear deeper into the wetland. But they regularly announce their presence. As the leaves turn and fall, trees lining the river reveal their intricate framework silhouettes, and the cycle continues. Without the rivers of my life, both literal and figurative, I wouldn't be who I am. Being alone with my childhood mommy, the Mississippi of my midlife, and now, well, life wouldn't have been nearly as rich. Alone time, which I now relish, would have been ever more difficult. Perhaps I wouldn't have understood the goodness of those I've met as I've flowed around in the current of life. Eventually, all things merge into one, and the river runs through it.
Thanks to Jack Shelton for that. Thanks, too, to Jim Gallagher, Sandy LeBlanc, and Jack Nachbar for contributing to today's program, Stay Human. My name's Michael Goldberg, hoping that we can keep the flow going downriver and up.